Okay, we're in the home stretch. This is it. You can do it. Believe me, it's a lot harder on you than this is on me. I have it easy up here. This is easy to stay awake. Hang in there. We're almost done. So in the last one, the last lecture we saw, or at least I said, hopefully you saw, hopefully you agree with me. If not, then we've got other, we can talk about that. But that science says something about God, and our beliefs about God influence our science. Science isn't theologically neutral. There are times when it could be, you know, hey, look, that meter is reading 2.5. Hey, unbeliever, you see that? Yeah, 2.5. Yeah, I mean, there's a sense in which that is. But in some issues, and some, especially when it comes to theory choice, they may not be always. Now, in this talk, what I want to do is I want to look at, well, what does science say about God? How much... And here's more of the important point. How much should we believe science? Because I would imagine, here's the thing, I would imagine that there, at least a few of you, would disagree with certain scientific theories on some points. And I would imagine that you would disagree largely because of, let's say, what Scripture says. Some of you also may know enough about the science to be able to disagree because you've been able to weigh the scientific evidence. But so here's what so big thing right now is, look, science can say things about God. It can be influenced by beliefs about God. Should we trust it? Now, I think there's a sense in which we should. I mean, there's certain things that we can totally learn from science. And here's what I don't want you to hear. I don't want you to hear this. Science bad. You know, as if like I've just got this pencil in my hand and I'm just writing science bad and I'm really mad. And the other thing I don't want you to hear is science is secular. You know, it's them versus, you know, it's the scientist versus the believers. I think that's one, there are so many scientists and engineers and mathematicians within the church that when they think that people are going, yes, science versus us, that totally puts them at odds and really in an awkward position. So when we talk about science, we mean believers too, okay? This isn't a us versus them. I mean, we're part of, you know, this is our science. But here's what I'll be saying. This is the title is, does science tell the truth? The bottom line, the answer, and you can go to sleep after this, is yes and no. Good night. But what I think we should have, and here's, I think we should have a healthy skepticism for the right reasons. I think sometimes we don't have it for the right reasons. And I think that unbelievers should have, especially, I think atheists especially, should have a lot more skepticism than they do about science. And what I'll be saying is that I think it's an irony that they don't. Okay, so a little bit of background. The new atheists, I don't know if you've heard of these folks. It's basically just, you know, within the last 5-10 years, what we have, especially since 9/11, you have people like Sam Harris and Richard Dawkins and Christopher Hitchens and Daniel Dennett and Victor Stenger. You have these atheists who are, you know, when they see, what's made them really mad is seeing how something like 9/11 could happen. And it's happened because religion, as Christopher Hitchens puts it, religion poisons everything. You know, gets the Twin Towers situation. So this has set them up in saying, look, it's not just, so the new atheists are this. They're saying this. They're new in this sense. It's not just that they don't believe in God. That's what atheists do. It's that they think belief in God is downright dangerous. Okay, so basically what we're doing here, you know, what we do every Sunday and what we do in our, when it comes to religion, that's a dangerous thing. And they want you to stop. Now that's not, and don't get me wrong, this isn't one of those things where like, you guys better be scared, now you're really ready to listen. You know, I mean, that's not the thing at all. This isn't one of those, it's not a ginormous problem, but it is a problem. So here's what Christopher Hitchens says in Religion Poisons Everything. He says this, as I write these words and as you read them, people of faith are in their different ways planning your and my destruction. Now, of course, we all know that you're right. Religion can do a lot of harm. I mean, you know, religion just taken, you know, in this abstract form, and even particular religion, people can do terrible things in the name of religion. People can do terrible things in the name of unbelief or in the name of whatever. The problem, and I'll just, this is just an aside, this isn't part of my, this is free. The problem isn't belief or not. The problem is people. Everywhere you have people hurting people and people doing things wrong, guess what you have? Every single time, the culprit's a person. If I were doing some scientific research on this, I would notice that in 100% of the cases where people do bad things, that it's always people doing them. I'd think there must be something wrong with people. And we, of course, know, I mean, sin has totally destroyed, well, not totally, but it's really, really damaged us. All of us, believer, unbeliever alike, are damaged goods. We're starting to be healed, thank the Lord, not because we're awesome, right? Okay, so now you might think, well, Hitchens wouldn't think that I'm dangerous. I mean, meaning you're thinking this. I mean, what if you haven't done, you know, no suicide bombing or anything like that? Listen to what Richard Dawkins says. Richard Dawkins thinks that religion is child abuse, teaching your children some sort of religion. Oftentimes, he usually has some sort of Christianity, whether Catholicism or Protestantism, in mind. He says this. Actually, what he does is he quotes of a psychologist, Nicholas Humphrey. But here's what Humphrey says. Children, I'll argue, have a human right not to have their minds crippled by exposure to other people's bad ideas, no matter who these other people are. Parents, of course, correspondingly, have no God-given license to enculturate their children in whatever ways they personally choose, no right to limit the horizons of their children's knowledge, to bring them up in an atmosphere of dogma and superstition, or to insist they follow the straight and narrow paths of their own faith. In short, children have a right not to have their minds addled by nonsense. And we as a society have a duty to protect them from it. If children have a right to be protected from false ideas, they have too a right to be succored by the truth. And we as a society have a duty to provide it. Therefore, we should feel as much obliged to pass on to our children the best scientific and philosophical understanding of the natural world. Okay, anyways, look, teaching kids some sort of religion is just simply going to cause them great pain in the future, or even pain now. I mean, you're messing with their minds, says Dawkins, through Humphrey. Now notice there's an assumption here that belief in God is false, right? I mean, we didn't even get to that part. I mean, like, you know, I would first want to go, well, why would I think, you know, he says that we shouldn't, you know, these children shouldn't have their minds addled by nonsense. I would first back up and go, okay, well, where was the part? When did this become nonsense? When did you show that? I didn't hear that. But here's what they're doing. They're raising the rhetoric, right? It's the rhetoric is such that This is serious business. This is something that's not just, you shouldn't be tolerant of religious people. This is legitimate child abuse. And Dawkins goes on to say some really astonishing things about, in this light. So that's one news. They're raising the rhetorical stakes, these new atheists. Now, another thing that's somewhat new, humans have suffered from this since the beginning, I'm sure. There's a surprising amount of confidence that these new atheists have. The bottom line is really this. It's like, let me warn you, and you probably already know this anyways, but when someone just says that they've got this slam dunk argument against religion or against belief in God or against Christianity or whatever it is, instantly you should think, this person is a snake oil salesman. There is nothing like a slam dunk argument almost on either side. You can get out of any argument if you're clever enough and you're willing to do the contortions. You might find yourself in some serious contortions, but it's still possible to evade. People will say almost anything to get out of certain arguments if they don't want to believe the conclusion. So just the fact that someone would say, well, Christopher Hitchens says this. He's talking about belief in God. Listen to the strength of this claim. How happy we ought to be at the reflection that there exists not a shred of respectable evidence to support such a horrible hypothesis. He's talking about belief in God. So notice what he says, not the horrible hypothesis part, but that there's not a shred of respectable evidence. I immediately know that someone's not going to be, they're not going to want a conversation. They don't want to give and take in terms of, okay, well, why do you think that? You know what? This is either he really means it and he's just absolutely clueless, or he's rhetorical, which I think this is the case. He was just being rhetorical and knows that people can be bullied. It is amazing how much people can be swayed by someone who sounds confident just because they sound confident. I mean, you guys know. I mean, you want to stay out of trouble, do something, you just act like you know what you're doing, right? If you act like you know what you're doing, there are so many people that will just believe you. And that's because people are naturally trusting, and that's a good thing. And people prey on that. This is the philosopher Daniel Dennett says this. He says that the brights, he calls them, need to come out of the closet. Who are the brights? A bright is a person with a naturalist as opposed to a supernaturalist worldview. We brights don't believe in ghosts or elves or the Easter Bunny or God. We disagree about many things and hold a variety of views about morality, politics, and the meaning of life, but we share a disbelief in black magic and life after death. So there's this sense of, I mean, it almost sounds like they're believing their own story. I mean, if you start calling yourselves the Brights, I mean, here's a mainstream philosopher. This was in the New York Times. Guys, let's start a new group, and we'll call ourselves the Super Awesome Ninjas. What's a super awesome ninja? Well, it's me. And you just go about describing your own yourself. Okay, so the new atheists, there's this, and I have read atheists who are very reasonable, and I totally appreciate their, you know, it's like, look, man, here's why I don't believe, and they have decent reasons. I think they can be overcome, but they're not like you know what, you're an idiot for believing, and I don't see how anyone could get out of this argument. If you know arguments, you know how someone can get out of it. Been there, done that. Okay, there's something that's not new about atheists, and that's the unbelief part. That's the, and it's really more than just them not believing in God, but it's more of this skepticism. It's this attitude of skepticism, and that really comes, that goes all the way back to the Enlightenment. And remember what caused the Enlightenment, the scientific revolution. You have the Enlightenment, and I want to talk a little bit about what that is because it's so important, but let me tell you why we're going to talk about it. Christopher Hitchens has, at the end of his book, God is Not Great, he has a chapter called The Need for a New Enlightenment. So there's all this problem with religion and religious people. What we need in order to fix it is a new enlightenment. Okay, well, what does he mean by that? Well, here's basically the if you think of the Enlightenment, you should think yay reason, boo authority. Basically it. Yay reason, boo authority. Now, of course, they didn't say it that way. You have Immanuel Kant. Basically the Enlightenment's spokesmodel. He says, look, here's the problem. When you let people think for you, you're doing what a child does. When you believe what other people tell you, you're being childish. When you believe you believe teachers or other people or your pastor or your priest or whatever it is, you're being childish, because what is it that children do? What's characteristic of children? They listen to their elders. I know parents are going, not as much as they should. Well, what's more childish than accepting someone else's authority? So the Enlightenment, according to Kant, is kind of a growing up, a coming of age. He says this, Enlightenment is man's release from his self-incurred tutelage. Every time I read that, I'm just waiting for pitchforks and shovels and guns, everyone to just rise up because they're so excited for this rallying cry. I mean, it's really dramatic. Look, this is you have put yourself in this position. It's self-incurred tutelage. He goes on, immaturity is the inability to use one's understanding without guidance from another. This immaturity is self-imposed when its cause lies not in lack of understanding, but in lack of resolve and courage to use it without guidance from another. Dare to know, have courage to use your own understanding. That is the motto of the Enlightenment. So it's this, don't depend on others, don't depend on authority, depend on yourself. Now that's really, really appealing to many of us. I mean, that's appealing. I mean, just that's my personality. That's appealing to me. I'm very much an anti-authoritarian. I've had to learn a lot over the years. So there's this anti-authoritarian strength. There's also, and this is related, a skepticism. Remember what I said a skepticism is? It's like a doubting. It's an I'm not so sure I believe you type attitude. Why should I think that? It's kind of this heroic, Promethean sort of thing. I mean, I often think of, I mean, whenever I see Enlightenment things or see, I think of all the old communist Soviet posters. I mean, that's just what it seems like to me. But the skepticism is this type of questioning, and I'm not going to take your word for it sort of thing. Again, Hitchens says this, of course, it's better for a healthier for a mind to choose the path of skepticism and inquiry, because only by continual exercise of these faculties can we hope to achieve anything. So skepticism is really important. So when he says a new enlightenment, he's saying we need more skepticism. I totally agree. I totally agree that we need more skepticism. And now, I don't mean cynicism in the sense where you're just, you have no brakes on your, you have no brakes on your skepticism. You have these ditches. You know, you need to stay on the road. You can either go into, I'll believe anything anyone says, or I'll believe nothing that anyone says. And either one is bad. You need to say, you know what, it's messy here in the middle on the road. It's muddy. I mean, water on both sides, nice and clean, but I drown. It's muddy and messy in the middle. Sometimes you know what to believe, sometimes you don't. But you need to have a healthy sort of skepticism without it going into a cynicism. Now, remember what I said about the Enlightenment and why this skepticism, or what kind of the cry was, is this yay reason and how we got that. Well, it was going back to Newton. When people looked at Newton, or basically what Newton did, the Newtonian physics said, look at what man can do with reason. And I think people were rightfully impressed. So the Principia Mathematica, which was his book, the big one that set it all off, I think just remarkable, astounding, one of the greatest works in Western history, and very, very difficult to read even a page of it. But of course, you take that good, something, you know, we tend to do, we take something good and exalt it into something God. Right? That's just, I mean, we are so good at doing that. And here you go. This is what you have. And you have the Enlightenment. It has this skepticism. It says, look, we've grown up. Look what Newton did with reason. Look what science can do. Look what science tells us. And then Hitchens goes on and says, look, Laplace has shown us that, you know, God is superfluous. Science has shown that. And then we saw a little bit earlier Stephen Hawking saying, look, science is based on observation and reason, but religion is based on authority. Science is going to win because it works. So again, this anti-authoritarian, I'm not going to believe what you say. So let's look. They want a new Enlightenment. They want more skepticism. So this more skepticism, please. And I think that's entirely right for them to ask for more. And I would like more of that myself. I just think they don't know what they're asking for. So let's see if we can. Let's see what would happen if they got what they asked for. There are two things here. There's a turning from something, and any time you turn from something, you're going to turn to something else. So it's this turning from authority or say-so or testimony of people. You're turning from that, and you're turning toward science. Okay, and those are two separate parts. I wanted to take those in turn. The first one, it's the whole, you know, it's just the bumper sticker question authority. I mean, that's always a funny one. It's like, don't tell me what to do. You know, I mean, like, says who? It's, you know, it's kind of like the liar's paradox. This sentence is false, or I'm lying. If it's true, it's false. If it's false, it's true. Anyways, sorry, that's just philosophy coming out. I'll keep that down for now. All right, so we have the turning from, the question authority sort of thing. This is really ironic. It's always this question authority. We need to be very, very careful. How do you know that you're in Missouri? I mean, you see signs. You know, you have this whole, really what you've done is you have this whole story, this whole coherent picture that has come together to make you believe that you're in Missouri. It's entirely possible that, I mean, not likely, of course, but it's so possible that you could have been duped, right? That you could, that could have been, maps could have been wrong. It could have been a huge conspiracy. There may be, so you don't know where you live. You don't know that you're living in Missouri because you've seen that you live in Missouri. You haven't directly observed, I live in Missouri. Someone's told you, whether it's a map. I mean, it's been a lot of things that have told you, but you've never seen it. Your name. You're just going on testimony that this is your name. I mean, maybe some of us have seen our birth certificates and all of that, and we can say, and we're assuming that no one has given us a fake gift, birth certificate and all of that. But again, you're trusting all of it. You've never seen that you're directly. You've only heard it by way of testimony. Now, a lot of the testimony is this weird, you know, this whole system of testimonies working together. But it's still testimony. You know, I mean, we have this thing where, I mean, how do you know? My wife, she was adopted, but she didn't know that until much later in life. The question really can be, and at that stage, it's like, whoa, that wasn't my biological mom. How do you know that that's your biological mom? You know, whatever. That you have to trust, right? You're accepting it on authority. And your mom's like, believe me, buddy, you're mine. You believe that there's a China, right? I mean, that you've never seen. I mean, do you know how many things you believe because someone has told you? And do you know how, and all of that is entirely 100% rational. I'm not saying that there's a bad, I'm not saying, look, now, whoa, you need to be doubting all of this. That's not the case at all. It's just showing, look, there are many things that you believe by way of testimony, by way of someone else's authority. You believe them, and you're perfectly rational. And in fact, you'd be insane if you didn't. That's just the way God made the world. Testimony of the senses. This is what David Hume called it. So even your senses testify. You're accepting their authority. I mean, we go when I teach philosophy, we talk about this quite a bit. But it's basically just, look, you can never step outside of your mind. Well, let me just, I'll stop at Descartes. I'll just say, look, Descartes was pretty... he was aware that you could just be having a vivid dream. All of this could be, I mean, it's not, you know, I mean, it's a lot more vivid than a normal dream, but hey, how do you know? And then now you have the Matrix, you have all these different, how do you know? Well, you just trust your senses. And you would be insane if you didn't, right? You would be malfunctioning if you did not trust your senses in the ordinary case. So there's certain authorities that we're going to accept, and most of our beliefs are based, actually, I would say this, we can talk about this later, I would say all of our beliefs are based on just testimony. We have to end up accepting something on faith before we'll believe anything. When it comes to reason, how do you know that the modus ponens, again, is a legitimate logical structure? Yeah, you just accept it. Now, when it comes to scientists, and some of you know this, especially if you've been in engineering, you're being trained as an engineer, or you've been being trained as a scientist or whatever, you know that most of what you know comes from reading. Now, there are certain things that you can do. You can say, all right, I know the math works because I've gone through this problem, but so much of what scientists believe and know, they've never experienced, and they accept by way of testimony. Now, there is really there's no one really who has like stepped back and checked to make sure that all of science coheres. No one knows that much. There's like people know bits and pieces of it. Some know more bits and pieces than others. But it's very, very fractured because there's just so much to know. And that's not a bad thing. That's just the way it is. But you're trusting that other people are doing things right, and there are other, you're trusting that those experiments were really done correctly. Anybody, any of you who have done experiments know that that is not a given. You know that you can totally mess with and mess up when it comes to scientific results, even mathematical results. Think about when you're using a meter. You're trusting all sorts of things that you may not understand about it. You're just saying, look, I'm assuming this is working. I'm assuming this is really giving me temperature or whatever. And again, it's great that you can do that. But it's still based on authority. So I just want, it's really, really amazing how much people like Hume and Kant and the Enlightenment missed how prevalent authority is. Now, that doesn't mean that there are some authorities you should question, no doubt about it. So that's not the issue. It's just, again, it's this blanket statement, you know, question authority. It's like, whoa, I need something a little less ham-fisted than that, right? That's not really all that helpful. So to go around saying to grow up is to question authority and miss the extent of authority and some of the subtle nuances of it, that doesn't give me a warm fuzzy when it comes to trusting you about the rest of your philosophy. Okay, that's the turning from. You just need to be careful. Hey, turn from authority. You got to do that sometimes. Just know when you just got to know when to and when not to. Okay, it's turning to science. I think we should be impressed, very impressed with science. It's a wonderful gift. This isn't necessarily an argument for belief in God, but it's certainly a comforting fact that modern science grew up in the crucible of Christian Europe and for very Christian reasons. Again, that's not an argument for Christianity, but it is nice to know that there is an argument out there. I'm not making it, but science is not the enemy. Now, but there are people who are really do think, look, there's just some stuff that has got to be wrong. It's got to be telling us wrong things about this, that, or the other, the age of the universe or the origin of human life or whatever. But here's the thing. How can you doubt something that works so well? Something that works so incredibly well. I mean, our current theories in physics, general relativity and quantum theory, these two pillars of physics, I mean, these have been experimentally verified more than any other theory we've ever had. They come out so accurate in predicting events in the world. In other words, they work so well. How could anyone doubt that they're true and that they say true things about the world? And remember what we said, science can also say things about God. So maybe it can say true things about God also. Here's the problem. Oftentimes, truth and working in the world don't go together. Let me say it this way. You can have false scientific theories that work really, really well. Even your best one. I mean, they can be just super good and still be false. But this is just something that we need to see. We need to look at the history of science and look at our current scientific theories to see to what degree are these false and not. Well, here's what I want to do. Think of two. I want to look a little bit more closely at how scientists know things. Remember, we were talking about staying within the scientific method. Okay, what are the tools that the scientist has to use? Well, we're going to make it pretty simple, and I think it's not an oversimplification for the most part. There are two things that are involved in a scientific theory. There are the observations, the things that you directly see, the data. Then there are the theories themselves. These are the things that you use reason to get to. You don't observe whether or not the theories are true. You can't observe. Now, you can observe, say, the speed of a falling object. That's part of the data. You can observe that the Earth, for example, or not the Earth, but you can observe, for example, that the sun is over here at one point. I don't know where it is, but over here at one part of the day and then over here at another part of the day. Those are the observations. Everyone, you just look at it. Nothing to infer. Bam, you just believe it. Now, that can be there are two different theories that you can get from all these observations. One is that the sun is moving and that the Earth is stationary. Another theory, which is that the Earth is moving. Which one did I say first? The sun's moving and the Earth is stationary. The second one is that the Earth is moving and the sun is stationary. Two different, same observations that everyone typically agrees on. They don't always, but let's just say, we'll make it easy. They typically agree on the observations. The disagreement comes in when they start having to reason using logic to the theories. Most of the action occurs, an experimentalist would kill me. Experiments are really, really important. But most of the debate over theories occur not at the observation stage, but at the how you get to the theory stage. The inference stage, the using the logic or reason stage. So again, that's in the Copernican example is, I just love it because it's such a great, simple example. You have two wildly different theories, and everyone has the same data. The 20th century philosopher Ludwig Wittgenstein, he once asked a friend, "Tell me, why do people always say it was natural for man to assume that the sun went round the earth rather than that the earth was rotating?" His friend replied, "Well, obviously, because it looks as though the sun is going around the earth." To which Wittgenstein responded, "Well, what would it have looked like if it had looked as though the earth was rotating?" Exactly the same. Identical observations in the 1600s led to two different theories. And how we go from observation to theory is a very complicated process. And here's what it's called. It's called inference to the best explanation. It's like you look at all the data and you go, okay, what's the best theory that makes sense of all of this? You know, I've got crumbs in the cupboard. You know, I see, and they're cookie crumbs. And I go, wait a second, what? And all I have are the observation is the crumbs. Now what, I want an explanation here. I want to know what caused it. Was it a mouse? Was it a kid? Which one? I mean, there's probably other, was it a Martian? There are different ones that it could be, some way more plausible than others. The two that are plausible, the most plausible because we have a spotless house, is that the kids are the ones who, we don't have mice, that the kids are the ones who got in the cookies. So what I start doing is looking for the best theory that's going to explain it. I infer the best explanation. But it's not a deductive theory. It's not like a mathematical certainty. You know, one, you might have two theories that are kind of roughly the same, and it's hard to tell which is the better one. In fact, reason alone doesn't ever decide. When it comes to scientific theories, you always have things, weird things that come in, like simplicity. Like, you want a theory to be simple, and so you have two theories here, and you go, okay, I'm going to choose the simpler one. Well, let's say you know which one's simpler. Why simple? I mean, you really think that simple equals truth? Well, maybe it does, and oftentimes it seems to. But there are, you know, the other thing is, how well does this new theory conform to a bunch of my previous beliefs? I don't want to have to rearrange my whole belief structure. Like, for example, I don't believe in, you know, I don't think that there are aliens. So I don't want to believe that the cookies were, you know, the house was broken into and aliens got into the cookies, because I would have to rearrange a whole host of commitments and beliefs that I had in the past, or that I'm bringing with me. So that's not going to happen, right? So you have all these things going into the process. And so what you have is, you have a scientist's worldview, their previous beliefs, affecting what theories they're going to change. And we saw that when it comes to evolution. You know, I mean, what evolution is going to look a lot better to you if you're an atheist than it is if you believe in a God. It'll just appeal to you more. And I'm not saying that's necessarily wrong for the atheist. I mean, it's just where he or she is. And this is true for every scientist. You may have read Thomas Kuhn's Structure of Scientific Revolutions. It's a really good, I mean, it's kind of outdated, but it's still a good introduction to the way scientific theories have changed over the years and how they change, and it's really messy. Now, here's the thing, but surely we're progressing towards the truth, right? You know, as we go from Aristotelianism to Newtonianism to now general relativity and quantum theory, we're getting closer and closer to the truth. Now there's certainly something true that we're getting closer and closer correlation to, like, they're working better, right? The theories work better. They match results in the world. But here's the thing. Again, you can have false theories that are saying false things about unobservables that give you true results. So when it comes to the Copernican thing, you really could have the theory that the Earth is at the center and do a whole lot of good things with that theory. As far, like, say for navigation, I've even heard now that they still teach kind of that when it comes to simple navigation, that you kind of take this model of the Earth as stationary, and you have you know, basically the sphere of the stars and all of that. But anyways, before the Copernican, I mean, it worked really well. It matched results, but it was false. Or was it? Here's the Stephen Hawking. Remember we talked about him. He, you know, the physics expert of our century, at least in terms of how people respect him. He says this: although it's not uncommon for people to say that Copernicus proved Ptolemy wrong, basically that that Copernican showed that the Earth moved. But this isn't true, he says. We can use either picture as a model of the universe, for our observations of the heavens can be explained by assuming either the Earth or the Sun to be at rest. Despite its role in philosophical debates over the nature of our universe, the real advantage of the Copernican system is simply that the equations of motion are much simpler in the frame of reference in which the sun is at rest. So the world's leading physicist says it's not necessarily true that Copernicanism is right. It's simpler. There's a disconnect even for Hawking. And he says this, and he goes on to generalize this. He says, if there are two models that both agree with observation, then one cannot say that one is more real than the other. So if you have two, they both match reality as much as we can tell about the observations. But let's say on the one hand you have like electrons that you can't see, or you have tiny little angels moving particles around or whatever, and they both equally match. Hawking says, look, that's it. He's actually even more, he's probably careless about this, but he doesn't think that there's a reality underlying that. I think he's probably just saying that we can't tell. Now, this view of science as just this tool to predict things that we can observe directly, rather than really getting behind the scenes and telling us, okay, yeah, I really believe in electrons or quarks or whatever, this view is called instrumentalism, and it goes all the way back to Plato. So it's not as crazy a view as it sounds. But again, we're talking Copernicus versus, I mean, that was 1600s. Surely now we're at a better place. We've progressed. Well, here's what physicists tell us now, and I mean, Hawking does the same thing. General relativity and quantum mechanics, these two pillars, disagree about certain things where they overlap. Now, I'm not, notice what I'm doing. I'm appealing to authority. I'm appealing to the authority of physicists who know these things. They say that general relativity and quantum mechanics don't jive at some places. Therefore, at least one of them has to be wrong. But they're both super, super, super accurate when it comes to predicting things that we can observe. But one, at least, is wrong in some extent. And not just in a small extent, because here's the thing, and here's what Hawking says. Physicists are looking for a new theory. They've started to look for string theory, and then even that's not, they're going beyond that, looking for something called M theory. So here's the thing. Truth and accurate prediction of observable events obviously don't go together all the time. I mean, they can, obviously, too. But there's something, even our current physics, something's wrong. And physicists know this, and they're looking for something better. Now, it remains to be seen let's say there is a new theory someday, which parts get thrown out. I mean, it still may be that a lot of the parts of the older theories get brought along with it. So let me just say, I'm gonna jump to this part. The only point here, the main point, is that both sides are trying to be as intellectually honest as they can. When it comes to talking, like let's say you wanted to talk or read or what with an atheist, I'm fine hearing genuine reasons for unbelief and all of that. It's just when the squawkers, the ones who are loudest, are saying things like, there's not one shred of respectable evidence for X or for Y. As soon as someone says that, I can't trust them. They either are super ignorant or they're deceitful. I mean, it's not, and if they're ignorant, it's not that I don't trust them in the sense that they're being deceitful, of course. It's just they're not reliable. So this intellectual honesty is something that is so important for all of us to have. When there's bluster, now, and again, this goes for us as well, for Christians. And I mentioned this earlier, when you have theologians who don't really know anything about science saying that the scientific evidence is really leading in this other area. Now, here they can say this. Here I've read these physicists who say that that this aspect of science is wrong. Nothing wrong with that. You're just saying, hey, look, I read it somewhere, which is where most of us read and what most of us hear this stuff. No problem at all. It's the overconfident, it's basically just a lack of intellectual humility. And by and large, I've been focusing on the new atheist, but I do want to put that last bit in. It's like we need to be the same way. And again, there's a ditch. You don't want to do, you know, you want to be like, okay, I want to have a healthy skepticism to be able to know what I don't know and kind of, you know, be able to discern where I need to be skeptical without running into I believe everything or I believe nothing. If you hear of someone who doesn't know anything about geology saying that current geology, the evidence, all points to a young Earth, and they just don't know the geology, come on, you should not, don't. In fact, you should call those people out. Say, look, let's have our data be good data. Let's go to the geologist who says that the current evidence points this way or that way. Right? The geologists, the scientists who are Christians, you know, if they know their stuff, they're the ones that should be asked. So anyway, so there you go. So what we've done is we've talked about this whether or not science can tell us anything about God and whether or not it tells us that there is no God. Well, the point here is that let's say current scientific theories said that there was no God, which, I mean, they don't even remotely do that. But even then, if they can't tell us the entire truth about the observable world, or I mean, about the things like electrons necessarily or quarks, if they're not accurate about that, they're probably not going to be accurate about things like God. And so we should know when to put on the brakes when it comes to believing what science says about God. Well, you guys did it. You hung in there. Good job for you, but that's it for me. Thank you.